Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Well, guys, it's a very special episode because we've got another one of the very faces on Mount Zeitmore. She is the skim goddess. She is Lacey Mosley!
What's up, y'all? The skim goddess. Skim I would also goddess? Like to be the skim goddess.
Have you been listening to a lot of podcast or something?
Yeah, the podcast. Yeah,
I love podcasts.
That's actually very good.
I love to be on podcasts.
Lacey, how are you doing in quarantine?
I mean, as good as anybody can be doing. I have a routine now every day when the sun goes down or gets cooler. I go out and I take a walk. Sometimes I get on the phone with friends. Yesterday, I was on the phone with a girlfriend on my AirPods, and this homeless man started, he just started yelling. He's like, you fucking black bitch, you bitch, you bitch. He's like screaming at me, right? And I'm walking past. Why was I just like walking past like la la la? My friend's like, oh my God, who's screaming at you? I was like, oh girl, I live in Hollywood. You know how it be. She was like, can you cross the street? She was like, can you cross the street? Why are you not afraid? I was like, nah. It's just nice to hear somebody talking to you these days.
It feels nice to be seen. Feels nice
right?
to be
heard. He knew I was black.
I was saying
you felt seen.
I was saying
in a past episode how often everyone just says hi now. Like, it's almost like you live in fucking Whoville or some shit. Like, hey, how are you? Whoa.
Good day.
Good day. Have a good evening. I'm like, okay.
Oh, I miss being yelled at in the city. That sounds nice.
Yeah, it was.
Maybe we should just make a podcast like that, like an ASMR experience called Getting Yelled At in the City.
Right.
For New Yorkers
and
shit.
Get out of my fucking way. Yeah.
Hey, yo, blue shirt. Oh, I could fall asleep to that.
Hey, yo,
that.
Blue shirt. Oh, my God.
I will fuck you in.
Right.
What's something you think is overrated, Andy?
this takes a little bit of explaining, but the concept of genius in the 21st century, and I'm mostly...
I love this.
Tread carefully, sir. Some of us have
our genius.
Well, yes, except... Okay, so accepting... Let's pretend that I'm not talking about Mensa, all right? And okay. What I am talking about is someone like Elon Musk, who is what I will say is a dumb dipshit who got lucky. But like, yeah. This is the
got
thing
lucky
about
to be born into a ruby mine.
Yeah, emerald.
Right.
Emerald. Yeah. I looked it up so I would.
I was born in a ruby.
I wanted to mind my P's and Q's because I didn't want anyone to come for me on this one, because I know like if you criticize Elon Musk, a bunch of people that will never have any money and have no connection,
Muskegee
have no connection
Airmen.
To him, like come for you.
They come
the
for
Muskegee
you.
Airmen.
That's what his fans are called.
They are?
No, I just made
it. Oh, I love it, bro.
Fighting 99. Down in flames we go.
I'm just thinking of that movie Tuskegee Airmen with Lawrence Fishburne, his last scene at the fucking cockpit. Anyway, I'm sorry. So, but tell me about the 20. Are you talking about more of like a classical, like in the antiquities era idea of what genius was and that people had a genius versus people being a genius?
No, just the 20, like in the 20th century. Okay. Like,
oh, okay.
Think of the people that like are called genius now. It's dummies like Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos. These are people who like just invested
rich
money. Like they were wealthy. Like Elon Musk had had family wealth from an emerald mine, all right? He dropped out of a physics PhD program after 2 days. And all he's done is invest his money. I didn't know what, I was about to say well, but I think he's just
in
invested his money and got lucky. And then he has backdated his ego, right? And he says, well, because I'm rich, I must be a genius. And then everyone like agrees that, oh, these people, but they must be geniuses because they're wealthy, as opposed to like they've exploited all their labor or they had family wealth in the first place or they got lucky. But like I was thinking about
that's
like
genius, Andy. That's genius, though, that they did that, you know?
20th century. Who did we call geniuses? Einstein, right? Niels Bohr.
Picasso.
Picasso, Watson, Crick, and Franklin, right? James Joyce. Like people who either scientific, like changed the scientific paradigm, changed the literary or artistic paradigm in some way. Those were geniuses. And now it's like a dude who buys a Ski-Doo factory. And
I feel like that it's just all about like how effectively you manage to mythologize yourself. Because I'm sure that there are like some people that we have like historically labeled as geniuses who aren't. Like there's like I feel like Edison is a really good example of that, where like more than a basic snuff test reveals that he was like in many ways a total fraud.
And what was he, Jamie? He's just like these shitheads.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So it's just like if you're able to afford to effectively mythologize yourself, you'll probably get away with it.
Edison is the Elon Musk of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Right.
Damn.
Wow.
Damn.
I was just thinking of just like the way we use the term genius as compared to antiquity, when like that concept of genius emerged, is that people had a genius in which it was something external that would visit them to inspire this like great work out of these people.
Right.
And over time, we began to sort of co-opt that with our egos and narcissism. And that wording became someone was a genius. That person is a genius rather than has a genius. And I think it's interesting just to even think about how you might create things, because people, you look at somebody, you'd be like, if you're a musician, like, oh, I love, you know, fucking Johnny Greenwood. He's a genius or whatever. Like, what does he do? But is Johnny Greenwood thinking that he's a genius, or is it more about inspiration that you are opening yourself and allowing yourself to create things? And that's where it comes out, rather than like, I think people put this pressure on themselves to be like, if I want to be a genius, then I'm going to.
Exactly.
The way we used to even articulate this concept was that like someone opens themselves up to some truths that they are able to then interpret by how open they are, rather than like, they fucking got it. This guy's got the fucking genius.
Why do you think I took my name off of DreamWorks?
yeah, that's a fact.
The way that I've found that term used a lot is just like it is like a narcissistic thing, but it also is like I feel like sometimes used to remove your like remove accountability from your own behavior and actions. Like in the case of Elon Musk and in the case of just like a lot of the Mensa people that I was talking to back in the day, it's just like a situation of like, oh, this person's behaving erratically. They're making bizarre choices. And then it's just like, oh, well, they're a genius. So you just don't get what they're doing. It's like, no, they could conceivably just be being an asshole or or acting weird. And then but if you are able to like label yourself as greater than, you're like, you couldn't possibly understand why I'm exploiting my workers. Yeah. You're just like,
let's not forget. I mean, right now we have a very stable genius. Very similar situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the way that America in particular commodifies narcissism and like makes people think that they are the genius rather than they are transmitters of a genius is there are a lot of American authors who just write one great thing and are heralded as geniuses and then like never write anything again because there's something just like toxic and unnatural and incorrect about that. Whereas I feel like other countries are just like, I'm plying a craft or I'm channeling something higher than myself.
Does the sophomore album curse, I wonder if that's unique to American music or if we looked at, is the curse of the sophomore album like globally embraced as like a law of creativity? You know what I mean? Because I'm, your point, Jack, about this emphasis, you do one thing or you come out with this work early, then the expectation of like the subsequent works just becomes like exponentially higher to the point where like you have no way to compare it really. But then also there are some objective sophomore efforts where you're like, you clearly got a lot of money and stopped giving a fuck. But I wonder culturally if that's something like we unique to us and our like, pursuit of fame.
It's not a rule,
because I think that's how
you
burn out.
Yeah, I do feel like it's a tendency that Americans have that doesn't really exist as much
exceptionalism,
elsewhere.
Baby.
Yeah. What is something that you think is underrated, Kate?
I'm going to talk about a director that I kind of discovered this year, and I'm still working through her filmography, but it's funny to me during this quarantine time, everybody is talking about like comfort food movies and especially Nancy Meyers movies. But one of my big discoveries this year is a director named Joan Micklyn Silver, who made some of the best romantic comedies I've ever seen. I would say the two best movies to start with her are a movie called Crossing Delancey, which is just this really low-key romantic comedy from the 80s with Amy Irving. And she somehow makes Peter Riegert into like the sexiest man alive in this movie. Don't ask me how. He plays a character named the Pickle Man. And by the end of the movie, you're like, where is my Pickle Man? The flip of that is she has another film called Chilly Scenes of Winter that is about kind of, a hapless 20-something who falls in love with a married woman and things do not go well. And that's with John Hurt and Mary Beth Hurt and is from the 70s. But she's really awesome. She made movies all throughout the 80s and 90s. Some stuff that, on its face looks like horn dog comedies like Loverboy with Patrick Dempsey. And then you watch it and you're like, oh, this is a movie about how women's sexual desires are not prioritized and how their emotional lives are not shown on screen. So she's really dope. She's still alive. If you can seek out any of her movies, I highly recommend it during quarantine. She's dope.
Wow. Loverboy, nice. I didn't realize Loverboy was that deep. I've like seen various moments of Loverboy, but that's the pizza delivery one, right? Where like
I guess it's based on a true story of a guy in Beverly Hills who was like delivering pizzas to rich ladies and was sleeping with them. But it starts off in that sort of like 80s raunchy mode. And then like by the middle of the movie, you have all the women he's visiting giving these like tearful monologues about how nobody like pays attention to them. And they're just like trapped in these mansions. And you're like, okay, what movie am I watching? but she's, I don't know. Her movies all kind of do that. You think you're getting one thing. And then by the end, you're like, this is very different than I thought it was going to be.
Oh, I'm excited.
Carrie Fisher is in it. Kirstie Alley.
Do you think the studio ever had notes? They're like, after these women, I don't know, like when they say these long-winded things, can Patrick Dempsey just be like, hey, so are we going to fuck or what? Or something. Kind of lighten it after that. I don't know what's going on here.
It is funny because in the movie you have those scenes and then it's like back to the pizza parlor where Hyman's and Sue.
That's amazing. Realizing that Patrick Dempsey was in an 80s rom-com makes me realize I have no idea how old Patrick Dempsey is.
Right.
I thought he must be very well preserved because I wouldn't have guessed.
Yeah. I think he was like a teenager at that point. Like was the point, he? Oh, right? Okay. He was a lover boy, not a lover man.
Not too late for a reboot.
The one thing I remember from that is lover man. It's just about a guy who has
lover
sex.
Man. This is about a guy who fucks.
The one thing I remember is that extra anchovies was the order, right? That they used to signal that he was, because they knew it was like so gross that nobody else would order that. Anyways, totally. Little lover boy fact.
What a time.
What a time to be alive, the 80s.
You'd love to hear it.
Fun fact, Jack always orders extra anchovies.
And that is anywhere. Where my order comes from, yeah. Just hoping that maybe this will come back in fashion. What is a myth? What's something people think is true that you know to be false or vice versa?
Maybe controversial, but I think Napoleon's personal life is way more interesting than his military career or dictatorship. His family drama is just over the top Kardashian level type shit. And his love life.
I did not know that.
Give us some hits.
My favorite is his love letters to Josephine. Like he explicitly states he can't wait to frolic through her little black forest. So.
Oh, I remember that line. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that.
Wait, what does that mean? Pubes?
Her pubes. Napoleon went down. He was a generous lover.
Woo! I thought he was talking about the drink at Coffee Bean.
They did that after.
I thought he was talking about the ham.
Get what the fuck did a ham grow, aka your butt.
Wasn't he really into like body odor? He was very pheromone sensitive.
Yeah, I guess he didn't shower very much. Like he had very slick and oily hair. Almost incel level when he met Josephine because she was actually part of the upper middle class and almost died in the revolution, but missed the guillotine by a couple days or something. So he hooked on to her for her class status, but he hadn't had a partner before her and like totally was into it, totally was in love with her, then had a messy breakup so he could date, I want to say, a princess of Austria. And then after that, that's when his family comes in and they want titles, they want land. They were bickering over who has the better status, and it's just a mess. And I've gone down a lot of rabbit holes. So the military, Waterloo, whatever, Rosetta Stone, fine. But personal life, he muff dives.
He muff dives.
Yeah, good for him.
It was like
my t-shirt. Guys, look,
it's
my
King Napoleon. He did go down, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tight.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I feel like that's one of the great unexplored historical docuseries that we still need. The great Napoleon. Like the only example we have is from Get Shorty, right? The fake Danny DeVito.
Danny DeVito movie.
It was like a fake Oscar movie.
I've been thinking about Get Shorty so much lately. I don't even know why.
I think about Renee Russo a lot, and not even because of Outbreak, but just in general, I had a Renee Russo. She popped into my dreams, like as a ticket taker somewhere. I was like, okay, Renee.
Whoa.
You work at AMC now? All right, cool. Good to see you. Because I was going to a movie, and I think it was Get Shorty. I don't know. These choir dreams.
They
I
are
know.
Weird. I had a dream that Johnny Depp was my chiropractor. Yeah. Don't know where that came from, but I was okay with it. I woke up feeling all right. New day.
And you realized you were wearing one of his turquoise bracelets when you woke up.
Like how I beat Shaq.
Exactly.
Wait, what?
You're like, I like every time you have a dream about a celebrity, you have to wake up with like a piece of their clothing on, and then you know it wasn't actually.
Oh, right, right, right.
And it really happened.
You were just wearing one of Shaq's shoes.
Aaron Carter really beat Shaq in the game. He couldn't have gotten that jersey otherwise.
You wake up sleeping inside Shaq's shoe. All right, Kim, guys, everyone, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes. That it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. On the subject of why we shouldn't want to go back to driving, let's talk about the roads and who is out there on them.
This is great news
segue.
For me.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Why? Do you not drive much?
I don't have a driver's license. I've never passed the test.
Oh, well, then this is great
I've
news
seen
for
this
you.
This
is
drive.
A big day.
Jamie,
that's right. You,
I know that. Listen, Jack, I know you see me drive, but that doesn't mean that I had a license when I did it.
Okay, riding dirty, Jamie.
Gets me riding dirty.
That was back when I had my 01 Corolla, pull up in my 01 Corolla and not have a license. It was kind
of
my thing.
I'm proud of you.
It was
I'm
a fun summer.
You.
Pull up to the scene with my license missing. So the Georgia Department of Driver Services, or their DMV, you know, a lot of bureaucratic institutions have just like tremendous backlogs of like applications and paperwork, yeah. Legal cases, liquor licenses, whatever, just because shit's not moving right now and no one's out there. But so to deal with their backlog of people, thanks to the Green New Deal, there's a lot of teenagers that had their permits and they're like, yo, I'm trying to get this fucking license. I want to take my driver's test. Let me get in there. On Wednesday, last Wednesday, the state's Department of Driver Services said that they had upgraded 19,483 teen permits to full-on licenses. Without a test. Without a test. They just waived the test. I love it.
That,
and I hate it.
That goes from like needing your parent in the seat next to you, like slamming their foot on an imaginary brake because they're terrified and think you're driving too fast, to just being able to drive on your own, just whatever the fuck you want.
You know what? Some people don't test well, okay?
Says the woman in Mensa.
Those driving tests are culturally biased.
Here's the thing. Sometimes when someone says don't hit the curb, I hear something a little different, and I never pass the test. I don't know. This is a great idea.
Y'all know I slipped through the cracks, right?
No, really?
No, what do you mean?
I scammed my license. I never took a driver's test. I'm not even joking.
What?
I've never taken a driver's test. No.
How did you get your license?
I know you two have a license.
I know, and I drive terribly.
Wait, how did you get a... Okay, well, hey, we don't have to make it hot for you on
the
here.
The pride with which you just said that was so
And I drive terribly.
Okay, well, listen. Every day I get home, I'd be like... Thank the Lord. We made it again because it'd be touch and go on the road for me. But no, I went to driver's ed school, but my sister went to driver's ed school and she did have to take a driver's license test. At the end of driver's ed school, my driver's ed teacher was like, you really need to practice more. And then I got my license.
Wow.
So, oh my God.
Good
so I sympathize with these 19,000 kids. I hope that they'll be all right. They're mostly doing rural driving in Georgia.
I have such a boomer's like college debt being canceled take on this. I'm like, hell no. I had to fail that shit fucking twice. I had to go to like two spooky DMVs that were not near my house because those are like the DMVs
the
in
easy
LA you
ones.
Knew. And I... That was what was the awful.
I failed in
shit.
Glendale.
Like
I'm never gonna pass.
They're like, they
I
give
didn't
these
learn
shits
how to
out.
Parallel park till I moved to LA. Then I was like,
have
I guess
you, but now
I
you
have
learned
to
fully?
Do this. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I guess.
Don't even hit people's cars anymore.
Major.
I guess the licensing process is not the dragnet that we're making it out to be, because I also basically failed, but because the woman giving me the test was my teammate's aunt, I just like got through.
You got nepotismed.
I got nepotismed.
Wow. Nice.
I like that. So, I like that.
Yeah.
There's different ways.
She gave me an 80. She gave me the worst score you could possibly give somebody without failing them, and like she would have failed me if she didn't feel bad for me.
I like that. The personality angle. You get in there, give them a little sadness. And Jack, you cute. You was probably working some little cuteness too. Like
I was crying the whole time. Just weeping openly. Like I was trying to get out of a ticket. I don't know. Why is this very pathetic? Really turned up the patheticness.
Oh man, I remember when I failed mine, I punched the dashboard of the car and my dad almost fucking body slam me in the DMV parking lot. He's like, that's your fault. Like, basically, it's like, it's that teacher, and I hit the thing. And I'm fucking 17 or 18 or whatever, wilding out. Anyway.
Very angsty.
I wasn't in a good place. Yeah, see, I have a lot of stress around the driver's test. My blood pressure's going up. My watch is telling me to take a few breaths now.
Yeah.
Well,
anyways,
Drive
a couple clicks more conservative if you live in the Georgia area, guys.
Yes.
Be safe out there. What is a myth? Catherine, what's something people think is true you know to be false, or vice versa?
So the idea of a patient zero, specifically as it relates to the HIV epidemic.
The COVID bad isn't real?
Probably not. One of the reasons, so there's a couple reasons why patient zero is a false premise. And one of them, I think it's so interesting and so basic, it's all about linguistics. The doctor who wrote up the report about patient zero, he actually didn't write zero, he wrote O. As in, this is our patient who is outside of California, because they were studying people in California. But it got misinterpreted as patient zero, which obviously is a way cooler like branding, right? It sounds good.
Yeah, as if they created the disease within themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah, I will make it. Because the myth is about like a flight attendant, right?
Yeah, exactly. A guy who, he was a flight attendant and
the French-Canadian or something?
French-Canadian, Gaetan Dugas, I think was his name.
Right.
And the idea was that he was just an absolute sex maniac going from city to city on the airplanes and fucking everybody, and that he knew he was sick, but he didn't care. He just had to bang constantly. So none of that was really true. It's just a good story in the sense of like, oh, it's going to get all the conservatives upset.
Yeah, but and helps reinforce those stereotypes.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why he was actually incredibly helpful with studying HIV. It's actually really heartbreaking that he was so demonized, because the reason he was so helpful was because he actually remembered the names of most of the people he had sex with. So they were able to trace from him, whereas all the other early patients were like, I don't know. I don't know who any of these people were. He was like sweet enough to catch their names, and then he got in trouble for it, essentially. It's so messed up.
So was just noteworthy because he was so helpful to researchers, and like there was so much written up on him because he was like able to help do like contact tracing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And then this book was published a few years after he died called And the Band Played On, which is pretty famous. I think a documentary version has been made.
Yeah, HBO.
Mm-hmm. And the person writing it like laid all of the blame for HIV essentially on him. And then a few years after that, the editor of the book publicly apologized, saying that he let the author do that on purpose because he knew it would drum up book sales, and he knew that it wasn't true.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Not worth it.
No, not at all. It's crazy. So that's another thing I think, like, in these times, that looking for a patient zero, and I see in the media they'll still do that, like, patient zero zero, or like patient zero of this particular outbreak in Chicago. It's like, I don't know if we should be doing that. I don't know what benefit there is to
it. I mean, maybe just for the purposes of scientific data gathering, as like some way to just identify, like, I think this is where we need to look first. But like for the media, that concept of it, I think, is what you're like talking about, is like how we need, like, who do we blame?
Exactly.
Like, who the fuck was it who ate some weird shit? What the fuck? Like, I think what that idea of a patient zero helps people do is just be like, fuck that person.
It just builds up their anger. Also, speaking of which, I want to say that we keep saying wet market in America, I think because it sounds gross, so we get to think that it's gross. It's a farmer's market. If we just called it a farmer's market, people would have a clearer idea of what they were talking about. Maybe a less racist one. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
What? Why do they call? Where did that designation of wet market even, like, what do you have to have a wet market?
I think it's the things that they sell there, if I'm remembering correctly, that a wet market has meat, and the dry market is like only like grains and stuff like that.
Oh, so fresh meat, fish, produce, and perishable goods. Yeah, the fucking farmer's market.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
There's not a fishmonger there. There's not a meat person there. There's not every person selling produce. Really interesting. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to move on to some important news, because Miles, you've had a spiritual shift on your relationship to Guy Fieri.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, Guy Fieri, the Fierissance, as I call it, has opened my eyes to some prejudices that I was holding against this man. You know, like, the last, I feel like, 18 months, I feel like the Fierissance has been, like, in full effect, where every story that comes out is like, what? Guy Fieri's not a douchebag? What?
I truly think that Shane Torres, shout out Shane, like, started the national waking up, the global waking up to the fact that Guy Fieri never did anything to hurt us.
Yeah. And like, I'm like, wait, hold on. This dude's like got like, He's like a good dad and husband. I'm like, what? I'm like, what? He officiated a mass same-sex marriage for over 101 same-sex couples in honor of his sister who was a lesbian that passed away. I'm like, what? Okay. Here. So I'm like, okay. And I, then the reason I bring this up now is that, like, we found out that there was this National Restaurant Association Education Foundation fund that was being set up for restaurant employee relief because the food industry has been just absolutely fucked by this whole shutdown. It's like, it's horrific to the point where most restaurants, like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how we reopen. I guess we'll just like, just go till the wheels come off at this point and then we'll go from there. But this fund was meant to, you know, help employees receive like a one-time $500 check when you apply to use for whatever you need, your bills, your rent, or whatever. Turns out Guy Fieri was on his grizzy because he was started banging those phones and reaching out to like corporate donors he knew. This dude raised over $20 million for this fund, like in a matter of a couple weeks. For it. And that means that's like, when they break that down, that's like 40,000 people who can get this grant because of him. And I'm like, yes, I abandoned like Guy Fieri sucks maybe a year ago, but I'm like, eh. But now like with this one, I've had to take another moment is to just examine what my Fieri hate was. Was it that, like, it's funny because I'm a huge Triple D fan. I love that show. I think it's great. I love food. There's not, I never watched
businesses.
Yeah. And creates exactly like the amount of business it's created for these small restaurants is fantastic. Like there's apps even dedicated to be like, am I near a thing Guy Fieri's been to? And now when you, but then I'm just sort of like, what the fuck is it? I'm like, it was easy to talk shit because he just looked like a dude with spiked tips and shit. And I was just like, oh, fuck that. Fuck his weird flame button ups. I was like, it had to take a moment and just say like, it was Guy Fieri merely there for me to feel cool comparatively? And not only now am I waking up to my own shallowness as to what my relationship with Guy Fieri actually is. I don't know.
Yeah.
That was beautiful, though. Like, yeah. I like that. I love
it. I had this process. It was like, it was just weird. I'm like, why the fuck do I, like, honestly, I'm like, I like everything he does. Aside from me being like, okay, I wouldn't dress like that.
There's something to be said for, like, it's easy to hate someone doing something very goofy, very confidently. I think that it's very easy to pile on and then, but it's like, if you look at like, well, what is that person actually doing? Like, are they doing? They're promoting a local business while looking goofy and being confident. Then it's just, I feel like it's almost one of those, like, I don't know, like you're sort of cringing on their behalf because they're not going to cringe for themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
But he's fine with himself. He seems to like himself. And I don't know.
That's what it is, right?
Confidence in others.
No, exactly. Right. Like insecure people don't like to see secure people do their shit because deep down you're like, man, fuck, why do you have that confidence to look like that? You fucking loser.
Right.
But like, really,
it's necessarily like,
I'm speaking for myself. I'm dismantling my own insecurities vis-a-vis my relationship with Guy Fieri.
I think the way he entered the kind of collective consciousness is as like, it's like if Larry the Cable Guy was a Mad TV character, Guy Fieri was just a different character played by that same like Mad TV performer. I feel like they were like, it was just that same like vibe. So I just feel like he got a bad break from like how he came packaged to two people. But I agree. Like judging people by their hair is probably not fair.
Probably. I think I had a kind of chip on my shoulder because I didn't like the name Tex Wasabis. I was like, fuck that. You don't know shit about any food, bro. Just keep it moving with the fucking fun
Tex
restaurants.
Tex Wasabis.
Right.
And then there's that New York Times review of his restaurant in Times Square. And I was like, oh, this guy sucks. But it was like from this snarky perspective of like food writers who just want to take a dump on him. Like, yeah, the food sucks or whatever. But like, in my mind now, I'm like, leave Guy alone.
So I actually have a different take on that article because that review of Guy Fieri's restaurant in New York Times was very famous. I thought it was very funny. Like, it was written in a very funny manner.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think people misunderstand what the writer was trying to do because they were saying that the writer was being a snob for caring that the food wasn't good at that restaurant. But I think what the writer was saying was like, people are going to come on a special trip to New York and they're going to go on a special trip dinner to this restaurant and the food's not good and you're charging $40 an entree and you shouldn't do that. And I think that was like a different point, but the way that there the article were ways, came though, across.
I think there were some descriptions of the food, though, that I was like, oh, okay. I mean, look, I enjoyed the thorough
A good writer.
Flaming.
I mean, there's no doubt of the writer's
Don't get
talent.
Me wrong. But I'm just, you know, again, all this to say, I'm doing all this introspection now to you know, this is the work I'm doing in Quar. If I come out of here loving Guy Fieri, then I feel like I've done my part.
You've grown as a person.
Did you know that he also fed firefighters and people who lost their houses?
During the fire, he's done a lot. In Santa Rosa. He's just a fucking, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's weird how we just sort of reached this like threshold where it was no longer, I don't know. I think societally we all just began to be like, yeah, we're not, whatever. It's Guy Fieri. Like, maybe we've all grown. I don't know.
Yeah. I will say also that I went to a very fancy food event in Las Vegas at Caesar's Palace in the pool area. And there's like multiple pools there. And at all the pools, it was a bunch of dressed up people like quietly drinking cocktails. But then when you went to Guy Fieri's pool area, that was a party. They had like a Guns N' Roses cover band and like airbrush artists doing work and people were in the pool. Like, it was a much more fun scene.
Yeah. Definitely. Meanwhile, Daniel Boulud is like scoffing from his side. He's like, oh.
Exactly. Right. Yes. Pretty accurate.
I grew up in a very pro Fieri family where it was TGI Fridays that carried his deal. Cause I remember we like, my mom was very enthusiastic about Fieri's output. And so, and she also, I'm kind of, every time I hear his name, I'm wondering where she picked this up, but she had this thing where she would be like, it's not Fieri, it's Fieri. You have to pronounce it the Italian way. Oh. Like, she was very into him. And so we went to like TGI Fridays and my mom was like, I would like Guy Fieri's mozzarella sticks. Like
mozzarella.
He's mozzarella. Fun. He's fun. And the best part is that Guy Fieri, depending on the pronunciation you prefer.
I should put respect on his name.
Doesn't give a fuck what we think of him. And that is part of why he is himself. If you're Guy Fieri, you can't give a fuck what people think of you. Or you can't be yourself in that way.
Yeah. I think also the misunderstanding of what Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives was doing. Because I know when it started, I think I was in my early 20s and I was like, why does he like everything? How can he be this enthusiastic about all food? Yeah. But welcome now that town. Like I'm smarter and also smarter people than me have explained it to me, it was totally just to keep these businesses going. That's what it was.
Yeah. I mean, if you go the John Taffer route where you travel the country verbally abusing small business owners, that's literally like, it's just. It's also fun. It's just as fun to watch, but you're like, oh, this is a less noble endeavor.
You idiot. I mean, I hope this is what that article by Mann was talking about, how like another way that pandemics influence culture is by, you know, that there was like a peasant revolt after the Black Plague. And I'm hoping that we see, and maybe this is like emerging class solidarity, where like we used to identify, like we used to be stratified by like, well, I'm a New York Times reader and looking down on like Guy Fieri.
Yeah.
And now it's more like.
We are Guy Fieri.
Can you pronounce it?
We're all Guy Fieri.
Dude,
new
thing. Instead of Guy Fox masks, Guy Fieri masks.
Yeah, dude.
My God.
I love it. We need
have
to
that
do
shit
that.
Marching on 1600. They're like, the Fieris are here.
The McConaissance, he just like got a Lincoln sponsorship. Yeah. Whereas Guy Fieri's doing
send
work.
Send off the revolution, bro.
Raising $20 million. All right, guys, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If
you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Well, speaking of dreams, let's talk about Robert Pattinson, you guys.
Oh, baby.
Jamie, you read the article?
I read the article.
Okay.
I know that like celebrities are canceled, but they're not for real. And so Robert Pattinson has a storied history of giving wild ass interviews because he doesn't like doing interviews, and he's a loose cannon, and I think he's really bored right now. So I guess I'll before we get into the interview he just gave to GQ, which was bananas, I'll start by prefacing my previous favorite Robert Pattinson interview stunt, which was back in 2011. He was promoting a movie called Water for Elephants. It had something to do with a circus. Mm-hmm. And he went on the Today Show with Matt Lauer. And Matt Lauer's asking, you know, bullshit softball morning show questions. He's like, oh, did you ever want to join the circus when you were a kid? And Robert Pattinson comes out and says, no, the first time I went to see the circus, somebody died. One of the clowns died. And then he goes on to say, the clown's little car exploded. The joke car
exploded.
And he just like, this interview ages very well because it's also fucking Matt Lauer. And he just like silences Matt Lauer, and Matt Lauer's like, oh. And then the
Matt Lauer
continues.
Is the worst.
Horrible.
I mean, obviously for the reasons that we've learned, but also just the... Yeah, I guess.
But just like as a
we don't need
like,
the also, but just he was
sucks on every level.
Yeah,
yeah. He like his personality and his presence as a media like entity, like I feel like just fell off a cliff of making sense like 10 years ago, and now it's like looking back is like why are we letting this smug asshole be. Like professionally smug and professionally an asshole. Anyways, I love Robert Pattinson ever since I saw Good Time.
Oh, he's like a good, fun act. Like he gets away with shit that it almost makes me salty because like male actors can get away with anything and just be called a genius. But that's not Robert Pattinson's fault. That's the culture's fault. So. Right. Anyways, Robert Pattinson comes out like a couple years later and admits that the whole clown thing was a lie. He's like, I made the whole thing up.
Of course.
It's coming back to haunt me. It was really early in the morning. Someone asked me what my experience with the circus was, and I was like, I have nothing interesting to say. I don't know why I said that. So he just lied to Matt Lauer. And so in this GQ interview, Robert Pattinson has been plus quarantine equals it's going to be a good interview. And in the middle of the interview, he brings up that he has this business idea. So he says,
"Wait, is the interview so far up until this point seemingly a normal interview?
Ish for
and it
him.
It kind of takes a turn, like, or it's got textures talking, of a RPAT interview.
It has, but it's like generally pretty normal. He's talking about like the Christopher Nolan movie he's going to be in. He's talking about like being quarantined in the middle of production for Batman, like." He says some funny things, but it's like he's generally going with it. But then I guess this is
like
the
third. I got this idea, man.
And one day, like 3 days into this like multiple day interview process, he says, this is his business idea. What if pasta really had the same kind of fast food credentials as burgers and pizza? I was trying to figure out how to capitalize in this area of the market. And I was trying to think, how do you make a pasta which you can hold in your hand? And then he goes on to say that he has a prototype for it. And he made the prototype with a panini press. And then he set up a meeting with, I don't know if I'm saying this correctly, Lili Massimini, who co-founded Sugarfish.
Yeah.
Like Robert Pattinson called them up and was like, I have an idea for pasta you can hold in your hand. And like Massimini confirmed this. They had a whole meeting about it. And Massimini was like, it's 100% true. I was not interested.
oh, but, shit. So this isn't a clown car vibe. Like, this has
no,
real...
This is a long bit that he's doing. It's fucking incredible. Like, it's really impressive. So he goes on to describe the product. He says that it's called Piccolini Cuscino. It's called Little Pillow. Piccolini Cuscino.
he's the My Little Pillow guy?
My pasta Piccolini. Pillow guy.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay, it's Piccolini Cuscino. I'll pitch it to you in this GQ interview and maybe I'll get an investor. So he's like, okay, I've got a prototype. They're like on FaceTime. He takes out a huge box of cornflakes. And he's like, oh, I couldn't find breadcrumbs at the store. I'll get cornflakes. It's the same shit. He takes out one gigantic novelty lighter. to flambe. He takes out 9 packs of pre-sliced cheese and he's like, and then you need sauce. And the writer is like, what kind of sauce? He's like, any kind of sauce. Pattinson puts on latex gloves, takes out sugar and aluminum foil, builds the little Piccolini Cuscino. And then he says, okay, now you have to microwave the pasta. He accidentally lights one of his gloves on fire. And so now he's hurt. He has this giant, like, phony lighter. He lights his hand on fire. He's like, ow, 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 ow. Then he goes back and then he burns the letters P and C into the top of a hamburger bun for Piccolini Cuscino. Then he puts the entire thing, including aluminum foil, into the microwave and says, okay, we're going to heat it up. And he explodes the microwave. And there's like a lightning bolt that comes out of the microwave. And he like takes cover all on FaceTime. And then the microwave breaks.
This sounds very similar to me drunk trying to do pizza rolls.
Right.
Holy shit.
And
the
then he
commitment.
Just goes, yeah. And then he just goes back to the phone and he's like, yeah, I think I have to leave that alone. But that is a piccolini coschino. And that's, oh my
God. What a fucking ender. And that is how you make it.
Did he just try it on the fly? Because you learn from the aluminum mistake once. Like,
yeah.
He knew.
It's just a joker, this
I
guy.
I saw the pictures. I don't know. Maybe he's...
How soon till Pattinson's the new fucking John Hamm, who's like guy who's like dying to be a comedian?
He's
don't see it happening?
No offense, but he's more talented than John Hamm. And
no, but I mean, like, he clearly has a knack for... Like, he likes comedy. You know what I mean? Like... He has a sense of humor. He's a little cheeky based on the Lauer shit and even this like microwave aluminum foil bit. But I wonder if like he'd ever truly be like, I'd like to do a little more comedy. You know,
I think he wants to be like Joaquin Phoenix. Like, I think he wants to be like
quirky
guy that can do anything and is known for being eccentric guy.
So this is
I think this is
basically manufactured. So this is shitty manufactured eccentricity.
I don't know. I kind of, he's been doing it long enough that I believe that he's a weird guy.
He did Twilight, and that's weird enough.
He did Twilight, and he was also like, if you watch his old press interviews from Twilight, he's actively making fun of the experience of being, like, there was never a moment in his career where he was, like, deeply sincere and then was like, he's a goof, he's a weird guy, I don't know. And it is true that, like, really only, like, male actors of a certain type can like get away with this shit and not be like dismissed as like annoying or difficult, but I just happen to like how he specifically does it.
All right,
well, yeah,
piccolini cuscino, baby.
I wait to see more from this comedian.
Invest now.
It does really, Kim, to your point, sound a lot like something I like my behavior when I was drunk. And I do wonder if we'll find out that he was just a fun drunk for most of his career.
His entire adult life. Oh, no.
Yeah, in 20 years, he's like, looking back, I was, it's sad to say this, and I don't mean to upset
drunk on the Today Show at 6 a.m.?
Every time.
Yeah.
Piccolini.
Maybe still drunk.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show. If you like the show, means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder. I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.